Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The 2018 Vision Maker Biennial opens tomorrow evening at 108 Contemporary in the Tulsa Arts District, a juried exhibition of contemporary fine craft-based artists. Since 1988, Vision Makers has honored the best in Oklahoma contemporary crafts, but this is the second biennial to celebrate regional craft, with artists from Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, Kansas, Missouri, and Arkansas, as well as Oklahoma. 33 artists were chosen for this year's biennial by my guest today, juror Emily Zilber, the editor of Metalsmith magazine. Zilber was the first curator of contemporary decorative arts at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts and was also a curator at Cranbrook Art Museum at the Cranbrook Academy of Art in Michigan, an important hub for craft-based art. Vision Makers opens at 108 Contemporary tomorrow night during First Friday with a reception from 6 to 9. There'll be a juror walkthrough Saturday afternoon at 1:30 at 108, and Zilber will lecture on making change, shifts in contemporary craft in the museum and on the page, Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock at Philbrook Museum. And she joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Emily Zilber, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about being a juror for a show like this, Vision Makers. Artists involved in contemporary craft from seven states. How do you go about putting together a show? Probably long distance as well.
Long distance, so you're evaluating everything from images, from photographs that the artists have chosen, that they've taken, that they've chosen to submit. So you're looking at the images that they think best represent their work as opposed to the work itself. It's very rare that a curator or a juror for this kind of exhibition has the chance to actually go and see the works. And of course, with craft, you're dealing with objects that so much of their power is in their physical presence and their tactility. So you really have to project onto the image what you think this might be like in space. But you also have to judge it on what's there in front of you. An artist really needs to know more than ever now how to take great photographs of their work if they want to be involved in exhibitions like this.
You know, I think of photography oftentimes doesn't do all sorts of art.
No.
It's justice. You know, I mean, think of a heavily impostoed painting.
Yep.
When you just do a frontal photograph, you don't get a sense of that texture.
You don't get texture at
all. I would think that would be so much more important in, say, textile arts.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of the works that are in this show.
In some ways, artists who are photographing three-dimensional objects really have to think about the photograph as another work of art. They have to think about how they best want to represent the ideas, the materials that are contained in the actual piece, knowing that they're not going to be showing you the ins and outs of the piece itself. So, what I've selected for this exhibition might have been a different show if I had the opportunity to go into a space to look at all of the objects together. You have to make decisions and evaluations based on what's in front of you, but also your sense of expertise, your knowledge of the materials, your ability to extrapolate from what you're seeing as an image. And with an exhibition like this, where you're looking at, I believe it was over 200 entries, and we get down to 33 artists, which is, you know, the rate's not great in terms of the percentage of folks who actually end up in the exhibition. You know, you're not just looking at the presentation of the photograph. You're not just looking at the quality of the work itself. And here I'm also thinking about how the artist's statement connects with what I'm seeing, but also fully knowing that most people go into a gallery, they look at the object, they pass by the artist's statement. So the work has to stand on its own. But ideally, the artist's statement also makes it richer, but it can be there without it.
Right.
So you're looking at some of that. You're looking at a balance of types of work. You'll notice when you come to the exhibition, which I hope you will, that there's everything from textiles to jewelry to sort of conceptual sculpture to furniture. You want a sense, especially for a show like this, which doesn't have one consistent through line or narrative.
It's sort of almost like a regional
it's a snapshot
survey
of
what's happening in this area in contemporary craft.
And everything, you know, every kind of juried exhibition is indeed just that. It's a snapshot of a moment in time. It's trying to get a sense of what people here and now are doing. It's, of course, you know, the boundaries are contained by the artists who decide to submit. So, you know, you're not, it's not the same as a curated exhibition where I might go out and say, okay, who are the artists in these seven places that I think are doing the most
speak to you personally.
Right, exactly. This is, you're getting the information and then you're trying to make a sort of, not an argument, but a really a snapshot, an idea of what the concerns, what the interest in materials are of the artists who are making their homes in this region. So It's always an exciting process. I love jurying and considering that most of my work as a curator is not spent doing this kind of reactive but more proactive looking for artists. It's a lovely shift of the frame.
So what was your sense of the artists that submitted from this part of the country? Is this a part of the country that you come to often as far as looking at craft? I think as a metalsmith editor, you're doing a lot in the Southwest.
You know, it's interesting. I try to look, when I'm looking at art, I try not to stay regionally. And that's, I think people tend to think of art as having these sort of centers in New York and Los Angeles. And that's just not true for craft. And that
crafts
everywhere. The institutions, the schools, the communities that have really supported crafts artists are not as bifurcated as sort of like a New York, yeah, LA
upstate New York for glass. Yep. It's Michigan for
I worked in Michigan at Cranbrook, which has an amazing craft and design program. I'm based in Philadelphia now, which has a really strong history in terms of jewelry and ceramics and metalworking. There are these wonderful pockets. And so what's been interesting about looking at craft and artists from this particular region is, yes, there's a sense of regional identity, but everything that's here is conversant with broader questions and broader conversations being asked in by artists across the country and around the world. I look at craft internationally as well. So it's nice to see that there is that kind of specificity, but what I can tell from the artists that submitted, you know, these are people who are not just myopically focused on themselves. They are thinking about their work within the context of a broader artistic community.
And there's an awful lot of societal talk within,
yes,
their work, too.
Yes.
Now, is that a particular prejudice of yours? Or not, I would say prejudice, but, you know, just, you know, predilection, maybe.
You know, I certainly find it interesting, but I also am seeing it more. And I think especially with a show like this, you have to react to what's been submitted. There's certainly socially conscious work. There's been a long tradition of it, but not just in craft, in the fine arts as well. You're seeing more and more, I would say especially in the last 2 years, more and more politically driven work that's coming to the fore as people use their art to express their feelings on any side of the spectrum around the changes that are taking place.
And I think most people don't think of that as being a part of contemporary craft artists,
but it is. Very much so.
You think of you know, the quilting of Faith Ringgold,
yep,
or you know, I mean, so many artists have used craft to express really important political points of view.
Well, and I think, you know, even if we take a step back and think about the history of craft as being really fundamentally intertwined in people's lives, these are the objects that they make and they live with. They use them to express values, even if they're not what we might think of as expressly political values. Craft is inherently full of meaning, full of content about people's lives. So this seems like a natural progression to me to have craft that does address political, social issues.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the work.
Sure.
Now, have you had a chance to actually...
Very briefly, about 10 minutes to run through.
Were there any surprises from what you saw in photographs,
yeah,
from what you actually, the actual object?
I think what is so interesting about, you know, and I've juried lots of exhibitions, but every single time, regardless of what the dimensions are noted as when you're reading through, a photograph gives its own sense of scale. You can read dimensions, you can know what they are, you can measure it out, you can have a sense of exactly how big the thing is going to be, and you are always surprised when you encounter it in the gallery.
Was there any surprises here?
Certainly some of the metalworks have a different scale than they do when they're photographed because you really get in, you get very focused on the object. It has an outsized presence within the frame of the photograph, and so you come and you say, I knew this was small. It's small. But it also, you know, that usually means that you have a chance to sort of get a sense of its intimacy, which is often much harder in the photograph. So it's a trade-off.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at a photograph of Debbie Barrett Jones's White Diamonds. This is one of the larger pieces, mm-hmm. and it's a beautiful hand-dyed, hand-woven wall piece. Mm-hmm. And it's gorgeous. So what was your impressions of that?
Well, I think what's really interesting about that in terms of the distinction between the photograph and the actual piece is that there is a wonderful sense of dimensionality. There is this really remarkable runner of these loose threads that really give you a sense. They have an element of fringe to them. They speak to the process of weaving because you get a sense of looking at the individual strands and not just the woven form. And so when you come across it in the space, there's a dynamism that isn't always translated in a two-dimensional image. That said, this is one of the pieces that we did select as one of the award winners because of how strong the design sensibility is, because of how strong the composition and color relationships. When you come to the exhibition and you see the work, you'll really be able to see how that color comes together. The juxtaposition of individual threads to make gradients of color is quite beautiful in the piece, and having that close proximity to it really does bring it to life.
Right. When you look at it across the gallery, you get the photographic
yep.
view. And then when you get up close, you see all the different textures
yes.
that are such a part of it that when you look at it from afar, you think of, oh, these are color differences. No, not really.
No.
It's just the way the textures are used to create different.
It's the artist's really skillful ability to navigate her medium and to really think about color in a smart way.
Now, when you think of a juried exhibition that includes artists from the Southwest, you would mm-hmm. expect to see Indian influence work. And I'm looking at
yes.
Rick Bywater from Kansas, his 12-point star. In many ways, it looks like traditional basketry, but his materials are very different than what we expect to see in basketry.
Yes, which is one of the reasons. So this is actually a basket that's made from wood, but not sort of the typical wood that we think of if we think of a sort of thin strand woven together. This is really
reeds,
carved and
yeah.
put together. And what I loved about this work is the way that he's thinking about tradition. He's thinking about his own personal experience, having lived on a reservation. And he's translating that into his own passion for woodworking. And I think some of the best works that you'll find in the show really do have that appreciation for tradition and a desire to take it somewhere new.
And the name of the piece is 12-Point Star. And like I said, it looks almost like a traditional
yes.
Design. And then when you get up close, it's something else.
He's doing something quite different and personal with it. So
yeah.
that ability to take the old and make it new is inherent, I think, in the best craft.
My guest today is Emily Zilber, who is the juror for the 2018 Vision Maker Biennial, which opens this weekend at 108 Contemporary, featuring fine craft artists from 7 states, I think over 200 submissions,
mm-hmm.
and 33 artists represented. Zilber is the editor of Metalsmith magazine, and she's formerly one of the first curators of decorative contemporary art at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and also she was a curator at Cranbrook Art Museum, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, as we keep looking through the show, I want to mention a couple of Tulsa artists that show up in this, and you know, you chose their work. But it was interesting to see at least one of the artists who has been doing such overtly political work, Shan Gosshorn, in which she's been weaving narrative threads into her basketry.
Mm.
And she always tells stories of Native Americans' relationship with a larger society. And this one, A Basket Full of Light, it's an radiant piece. She's using silver and copper foil to do the basketry. So in a light, it just shines in an incredible way. What was your impressions of that particular piece?
When I came into the gallery, well, it just draws you to it. It's magnetic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's she's really thought about reflectivity in such a smart and sensitive way. And again, you know, as with the piece we were just discussing, taking that sense of tradition and bringing it somewhere new, showing that, you know, everything old can be new again. Really wanting to take something that is deeply felt and a part of her larger thinking and make something quite beautiful and meaningful with it.
It's been interesting because over the last few years, she's been doing some really amazing, overtly political work where you're looking at these designs of photographs taken and woven into basketry of reservation and Indian schools.
Yeah.
And there'll be the words of a treaty actually woven in, like some of the treaties that have been broken over the years. So it's really amazing work. And yet this is...
Well, and I have to say some of that is self-selective, right? It's what the artist chooses to have you.
Yeah,
I would
no.
it, if I was going to her studio and saying, I want X, Y, and Z work for an exhibition, I might have picked something different. But when you're doing a juried exhibition, you have the work to choose from. And this was the piece that just in terms of composition, in terms of the power that it had through the image and what I could extrapolate it would have in the gallery, it really stood out. And so it's an interesting question. A juried exhibition gives an artist a chance to say, how do I want to be seen in this moment, in this context?
Yeah. Laurie Spencer is another artist. The Tulsa audiences are very familiar with seeing it. And I would think this would be a very difficult work because one of the things that, like, her work is actually meant to, in a way, it's meant to be touched. And
yes.
And it's most of the time it involves whistles and sounds that are part of the sculpture, which is just amazing to me.
Well, I have to say that is for the folks at 108 Contemporary to decide how they want to do that. You know, there's a long and interesting history of people engaging with sound in the context of ceramics. And so I'm happy to see this tradition here. I think of the artist Parutoshiko Takeezu, who was the first sculptor in clay to close her vessels. And many of them had a small piece of clay inside so that when you picked them up, they had this wonderful rattling to them. Of course, when you see those pieces in a museum, you have no idea that there's this sonic element. And so... the chance to have a really multifaceted experience with craft in the way that artists intended is something that often gets curtailed in the context of just keeping the gallery safe. But we'll see if 108 Contemporary allows people to to come into contact with the work in that way. My guess is not. So
yeah.
Don't touch.
But it is a striking work.
It's a beautiful work. It's a beautiful work. It's got these wonderful sinuous curves to it. To me, it spoke of a sort of natural progression from Art Nouveau ceramics and glass, those kinds of sinuous lines, except taking it somewhere that was very new in terms of the treatment of surface and color and texture. So again, I find myself personally drawn to artists who do have a sense of grounding in the history of art, but are going somewhere new with it.
One piece that really I thought was really interesting is Diane Cody's Whether or Not, because I would think this would be a very difficult piece to see in a photograph and really see what you're seeing, because in the gallery, you know, you have this painting that's covered up with silk dye and silk, and it's called Whether or Not, and we're talking about weather, and again, it's sort of thinking of our blue sky can lead to tornadoes in the afternoon, and it really gives that sort of sense of this sort of veiled, sinister note to it with the use of this silk material over.
It is a literal veil. Veil is quite the the right word there.
I mean, in the even in the catalog, it gives you a sense of the three dimensionality of the work. It comes off the wall in a way, but I imagine that was another piece that when you saw it in the gallery, you go, oh, this is what it looks like.
No, it's absolutely true. That piece really does have a sense of layers that that make it, because you have a view of what you're looking at that's a little obfuscated by the materials. Of course, being able to look at installation shots give you a better sense of the dimensionality, how it's going to exist in the space. That is certainly a piece that I think when folks come to see the exhibition, if they're familiar with images of the work, if they've had a chance to see the catalog before, they'll be very surprised. But it rewards close looking. And so that's one of those things where you have to say, okay, I'm going to make a jump here and say that I really want people to see this piece.
Yeah. Another Oklahoma artist, Tulsa artist that's represented, is Whitney Forsythe, her Watershed Moment, which is this large mandala that's on the floor, completely made of ceramic objects in brick clay. And again, it sort of, an Oklahoman says, oh, this is red earth, which is, you know, sort of our motto, you know, for this, west of Tulsa, the whole earth turns to this brick red patina. And this mandala is made out of Red Earth, and again, thousands probably, probably over 1,000 objects that are fired into creating this mandala.
Yeah, it's a remarkable piece. I love that it asks people to engage with objects in the gallery in a different way. So this is large piece. It's on the floor. This is the kind of piece that would really be served well by getting down, you know, like squatting in the gallery, really changing your physicality to engage with it, because there is such detail, but it's not presented to us as we normally encounter art. It has this amazing sense of earth. I also look at this and I think of the structures that animals sometimes make in nature that have a beautiful sense of order to them. She's done that with these kinds of natural elements that she's putting together. And it is interesting that it feels so Oklahoma to you, because she worked on this at the Watershed Center for Ceramic Art, which is in Maine. So so she's taking Oklahoma back to the East Coast and vice versa. No, I think I'm happy that this is one of the first pieces that you'll encounter in the show, because it really gives you a sense that craft is not necessarily just what you think it might be. And the physicality and tactility of craft that we know, you know, when you pick up a wonderful ceramic mug and you feel the weight of it in your hands and you have an experience with it.
Or a beautiful piece of jewelry.
Or a beautiful piece of jewelry. That can be shifted into something like this, where it requires you to change your physicality to actually see the piece, because you have to look at the floor or you have to look at a different context.
We're talking about the 2018 Vision Maker Biennial, which opens this weekend at 108 Contemporary. My guest today is the juror, Emily Zilber, who is the editor of Metalsmith Magazine. And the next piece I'd like you to talk about is actually a piece of metalwork. It's a piece by Donna Gillespie, and it is this incredible, incredible necklace, which features copper almost like it seems like it's almost in its natural form in a way, you know, but it is an incredibly created piece.
Well, she's done really interesting things with patina here. She has gotten these incredible blues and greens that, you know, speak to the way that one material can be handled in many different ways. And of course, she's left some of the copper with that traditional sort of copper color, so you get this really beautiful juxtaposition. This is also a piece that takes up much more space on the body than we typically think of jewelry is taking. It becomes almost a piece of armor, a sort of de facto breastplate. One of the interesting things is you'll see it in the gallery and you won't see it on a body. And I hope that, I hope that some folks will have a chance to do that. At least you do have a chance to see that in the catalog, because these are pieces that really do come to life. This is a piece that, even though it has this oversized form, it is very much meant for the body, and it's sensitively handled to fit a body. So it's wearable, even though it might not look that way.
Yeah, no, and it is, it is, seeing it in the catalog, it really is a striking piece on a body. And there are several pieces like that, where almost putting them on a mannequin would give them a new sense of how they're supposed to, you know, how they were designed to look.
You know, it's interesting. I have a couple of different feelings about showing jewelry on mannequins. It's always interesting to get a sense of how something lays on the body, but what you lose with a mannequin is the sense of movement that comes when you it on a person, and it becomes static and you're not seeing it in the round. And so there's so many different ways you can look at jewelry. You can look at it as sculpture. You can look at it as something that is only complete when it's in motion. So the chance to look at it in the context of the gallery as the sort of sculptural object, where you can see not just the front, but you can see the back, you can see how the clasps come together, you can see how it's intended to fit on the body, that kind of access is really wonderful and less static than what being on a mannequin sometimes provides.
Well, let's finish with a couple of the award winners, and that is, first one would be Natalie Spicker, who has a wonderful sense of humor in her work. She has two pieces in the show. One is called Sea Reverse, and it's basically this woven cotton and linen wall piece that basically looks like the tag. Sea Reverse for care instructions, 50% cotton, 50% linen. And it's, you know, we're talking 3 feet by 2 feet.
Yep. It's self-referential. I love with this piece that there's an exhortation to do something in the gallery you can't do, right? You can't see the reverse. It's hanging on the wall. You can't take it. She also won an award for art craft dialogue. And so I think there she's thinking about the way that language is used in contemporary art in a smart way. She's used language to talk about the materials that she's working with. So it's self-referential and in such a smart and engaging and accessible way. You know, everyone has a tag in their clothing. Everyone can relate to this. And everyone has to sort of question what happens when they read that command, see reverse, and they want to actually engage with it, and they can't.
And the other piece is a piece, it's an installation piece called Waffle Fries, Warp and Wolf 'em Down. And it's just a fun piece.
It's a fun piece. And so, you know, with that warp and woof, she's playing with the way that textiles are made. So there's this real acknowledgement and interest in process of textile making in the work, but she's taking it into a bigger conversation, right? So we're looking at that over-under structure that makes woven fabric, but it's somehow become this oversized sculptural waffle fry. It's very fun. It makes me think of process artists from the 1960s. I think of Eva Hesse. I think of Robert Morris coming into there. And so there is that broader dialogue, but also still a core foundation in craft process that I really like in her work.
The last artist I'd like to talk about is James Thurman, who when you look at the piece at first glance, you say, those look almost like polished minerals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they have this look of, you know, like a mineral, you know, cut in half and then polished. But then when you get up close, you realize, no, this is made of paper. You know, and actually you're seeing recycled paper with the words still on them,
mm-hmm.
but he's crafted into these discs.
He's crafted them into these remarkable objects. He's thinking about ingenuity in craft, the way that people have constantly had to reinvent the way that they approach their materials. I think people often think of craft as tradition, the same handling of the same materials, and really craft is a history of learning how to use new tools. And so he's done that here, and he's also linked it back to really important artists within the arts and crafts movement and design movement. He's thinking about Christopher Dresser. He's thinking about William Morris. And so that context makes this innovation that much more meaningful.
Well, your final impressions of the art that you selected and the art that you didn't, as far as what it says about this region today.
Well, I don't want to think about the art that I didn't. I think we've got these wonderful 33 artists who have shown a sense of expansive possibility in the way that they're thinking, a real sense that with skill and with invention, craft can be something that can speak to everyone. And they've done it, you know, really to the highest degree. I think it is a show that is accessible. Even if you don't know craft, you're not an art person, I think there's something there for you. And I hope that lots of people come out to see it. It's a really wonderful exhibition.
And the opening is tomorrow night from 6 to 9 at 108 Contemporary. Emily, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Emily Zilber is the editor of Metalsmith magazine and the juror for the 2018 Vision Makers Biennial, which opens tomorrow evening at 108 Contemporary, featuring fine craft artists from 7 states, 33 in all, on display at 108 Contemporary. There'll be an opening reception from 6 to 9 Friday evening during First Friday, a juror walkthrough Saturday at 1:30, and a lecture by Zilber Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock at Philbrook Museum. Information at 108contemporary.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.